Chapter 21. The next few days were relatively quiet ones. No one outside the house knew that Chris wasn't in California, and so a lot of phone calls and drop-ins ceased. Chris called a girl named Lynette on Sunday night of his return, and she wound up staying in his room for the week. It always made Warren more comfortable when Chris was sleeping with a woman on a steady basis. Ron had begun to eat normally, although he still wouldn't touch meat. Warren and Ruth took up their normal two-week cycle in between visits with Sarah, and Lorene temporarily stayed in the New York apartment. The dinners were fun. Lynette, who had met Chris through Warren, teased everyone and acted very zany. Chris nicknamed her the Bird. And by the middle of the week, she had transformed the unused middle room into a painting studio and had begun to do a mural on one of its walls. At dinner on Thursday, Chris dropped his bombshell. Clue was arriving from San Diego the next day, and there was going to be a band practice at the house on Friday night. At first, Warren just stared at him. Then he fell very quiet. When Bird, Ruth, and Ron tried to make social talk, it became obvious that there was a new tension that was choking communication at the table. Chris and Bird left the table as soon as they were done eating. Since Chris had nicknamed her, Lynette had started making whistling sounds and calling herself the Bird. She was a very tall, thin girl with short, straight hair that added to the effect. Warren said she was crazy enough before he started to play with her. "He's just taking cover for a little while, Warren," said Ron. "Just until tomorrow," said Warren sharply. Ruth said, "We won't be here anyway, will we?" "I don't know. Maybe we could change our plans." "Warren, about the last thing I want to do is be trapped in a house with music that's going to give me a headache." "We can figure out what we're going to do later," said Warren. He turned to Ron. "Middle of next week is the end of the month. Have you decided what you're going to do? It will only make things bloodier if I have to throw you out." Ron stiffened. "What do you mean? Physically throw me out? That's what I'm trying to avoid." Ron gave him a menacing look. "I told you that I'd leave, but if I were you, I would try to avoid having a physical confrontation with me, too." Warren stared back at Ron and quipped, "When the end of the month comes, I'm going to do everything that I said I thought should be done. If you're in the way, there'll be a problem." "Why are you trying so hard to alienate me, Warren?" "I told you what kind of an influence I think you are." "Isn't much wonder that Robin didn't want me around either, then, is it?" Ron got up from the table and slammed his chair under it and went to the stereo. He was at the sink when the first chords of "I Shot the Sheriff" froze the look on Warren's face. Ron looked over at him, smiled into a sneer, saluted, and began to wash the dishes. Ruth leaned over and whispered to Warren, "Let's not make a big deal out of this. If you don't feel like doing anything on Friday night, we can just stay at my apartment." "That's not really my point," said Warren, puffing on his pipe, leaning back against the wall. "The point is that I've let things get out of hand. I can't go into the city because Lorene is there. And I don't want to stay in here for drugstore night. If Chris is having people do drugs and play music, I think we can assume he's not in mourning anymore." "Just don't do things that you're going to be sorry for," said Ruth, trying to meet his eyes and show him that she supported him, but that she wanted him to go easy right now. "I've already done a lot of queer things that I'm sorry for," said Warren. "Now the question is whether I'm going to rectify my mistakes." Chris took the Bird to a meeting with Clue the next afternoon. When he had called and asked if he could come out and talk, Chris was at first reluctant to say yes, but decided that Rahway was his territory, and he could afford to say yes to a meeting in a place where he would feel strong. He also knew that Clue wanted to talk about keeping the business arrangement intact, and that he wanted to push for more upfront money so that he would feel that his investment was protected. In Chris's judgment, none of those things was necessary. But the feeling that he had gotten from Clue was important and would determine whether or not he was willing to take part. Clue was alone and looked pretty out of place getting off of the plane at the airport. His boots, cowboy shirt, and the meandering way he walked made him appear to be a character in costume and drew a certain amount of attention from the people passing him by. They shook heads, and Chris introduced Lynette as simply the bird. Bert squawked and said that he reminded her of the Lone Ranger. "He was a cop," said Clue. "My granddaddy would take great offense to hearing that. One of his own resembled the law." "Everybody's got to look like something," chirped the bird. She sat between the two men on the front seat of Chris's car, and when she saw Clue staring at her legs, she moved closer to Chris and put her arm in back of his head. She stroked the ends of his curls. She brought her face close to his ear and said, "Are you going to feed your bird when we get home?" Chris smiled over at Clue. "Just keep quiet for a little while now and find something to do when we get back to the house." When they got into Chris's bedroom, Clue produced a large vial of cocaine and took a necklace with a spoon attached to it from around his neck. He handed both of them to Chris and said, "Tell me what you think." Chris took two snorts from the spoon and felt the ultimate clean rush of the cocaine clear his head out. "That's great stuff," he said. "Uncut, pharmaceutical pure," said Clue, nodding. He took two snorts himself. "Does your chick or the guy in the back room want any?" "I don't think so," said Chris. "Chris, I've got to fly back tomorrow, so I'll get to the point. It was a shitty thing that we did about not telling you that Peter had checked out. I know that, and we all feel pretty bummed out about it. But the trouble is that we were real short of money, and we just had gotten stiffed by one of Peter's other connections. But everybody, especially Lonnie and Harry, knew that you were nothing but a righteous dude, man. I was the one who fucked things up because I didn't know you. I'm hoping we can take care of that while I'm out here." What I hated most was that Peter was dead. The rest of it didn't really matter, except that I didn't want to be in this house with things being like that. "Chris, we all understand that, and nobody has any complaints about anything that you ever did with regard to business. But now we got a new shipment of weed ready to come out here, and we could add on a couple of ounces of coke if you think that you can move it." "I don't know about the coke. I'd have to talk to my people. But it's still summer and the pot moves quickly because a lot of people aren't getting it from their usual places. And a lot of people are home from school and have jobs and there's a lot of partying going on. So I don't think there'll be a problem to move stuff at the right price and with the same deal." Clue handed the vial and spoon back to Chris, who snorted another one into each side of his nose. Clue took two snorts, leaned forward, rubbing his nose for a minute. "Damn, this stuff is good," he said. "The price is going to be pretty much the same. But do you think you can get your people to come up with about 60 a pound up front at least, or at least 100 a pound on delivery?" "Up front doesn't feel too good. On delivery might be okay, but it's going to slow things down a lot if they have to have 500 or so before they can come and see me. They're going to wind up having to go back to the people they're selling to, and everybody gets paranoid when the rules of the game get changed. I'm telling you that the count will be very righteous for everybody, and most everything is being paid for right away now. It's bigger than it used to be when Peter was carrying pounds in his flight bag, you know? I'm gonna have to talk to my people, said Chris. Well, like I said, I was hoping to fly back tomorrow. You think you can tell me anything before then? Probably not, said Chris, but I can talk to some people and get an idea of how they feel about it. Okay, that's the way it's gonna have to be, then. By the way, who's the guy in the back room? That's Ron. He's okay. Are you sure? I mean, I didn't like what he was looking at me when I came in. Chris laughed. East Coast paranoia is catchy. Ron's fine, and he doesn't move any weight, so there really isn't anything to talk about with him. That's cool, said Clue. There was a knock at Chris's door, and Ron's voice said, Chris, I'm going to be heading up north until tonight. I'll see you later. Wait a second, said Chris. He went to the door and unlocked it. Do you want to snort some coke before you split? I don't think so, said Ron. Band practices tonight. Are you going to come back and listen? Yeah, probably. We'll need to sit down and talk at some point over the weekend, said Ron. Chris nodded. Okay, we'll work it out. Chris closed the door again, and Ron started back through the bird's studio. She was painting on the wall in the standard panties and t-shirt uniform that she wore no matter who was in the house. She felt him rivet his eyes on her ass as he passed and flex her cheeks to tease him. But he didn't stop and just said, "So long, Lynette." She wished he would call her the bird like everybody else in the house did. While Ron drove up the parkway, he started the tape recorder. Big time changes are going to happen in Rahway. Maybe if Chris just moves in the bird, it will be okay for a while. But having Clue out here is a mistake. I swear I don't understand how his mind works sometimes. It's true that Warren's being an asshole about this, but I can't shake the feeling that when I talk to him alone, it feels like somewhere in there he's got a point that deserves to be listened to. It feels like now I never went to Minneapolis, like I made Robin up in some dream about a perfect woman or something. Even though I stopped talking about her, I still think about her all the time, and if it wasn't for Rahway, I think that would be all I would do. I guess I'm going to find out about that soon enough. The poetry is what keeps it real in my head now. Rahway keeps it real. Without those things, it would all slip away. The drive to his mother's house seemed to be over in no time. He opened the door with his key this time and bent down to pet Chipper, who was scratching at the hall door when she heard him. He hugged the dog close to him and cleaned the sleepers from her eyes. Do you want to go out? He said. Chipper began to cry and run around in little circles. He led the dog out through the kitchen and out into the backyard. He sat on the back steps smoking a cigarette while the dog sniffed and peed. Then he heard Aunt Dot's voice. Is that you, Ronald? Yeah, I'm out here, Aunt Dot. I'm glad that somebody else besides me thinks to let this dog out, said Aunt Donnie. They sure enough know when they need to pee and crap. But do you think that either of them thinks about the dog? I don't know, Aunt Dot. How are you feeling? The same. I don't get better anymore, Ron. Listen, there's something that I want to talk to you about. Come upstairs after Chipper's ready to come in. His Aunt Dottie was sitting in the kitchen with the ever-present cigarette in her hand and the open package of Malamores in front of her. Can I get you something? No. Sit down here. I want to know what you've decided to do. Ron shifted a little uneasily and lit another cigarette. He always chain-smoked around his aunt and guessed that it was her influence. For right now, I'm going to go back to school, I guess. Are you going to stay in that hippie commune? It's not a hippie commune, Aunt Dot. And I don't know. I've never asked you for very much, Ron. But I'm going to ask you for a big favor now. What do you need? I want you to come and live with me up here. Now, before you say that you fight with your mother and don't get along with George, let me tell you that I want you to live up here. And I want to clean out the front room and let you put whatever it is that you want in there. You can stay away from the downstairs as much as you want. I don't have a lot of money, Anton. I don't need your money. I need somebody who isn't going to let me die alone. Ron winced hard on the words. You're not ready to die yet. Don't talk foolishness. I want you to come up here and promise that you'll stay with me until I die. Can you do that? Ron put his head down for a moment. He felt guilty about the idea that he really didn't have any other place to go and that she didn't know it, but he nodded and said, I should at least be able to do that for you. Then his aunt shocked him. She put her hands on either side of his face and drew him to her for a kiss. You're the one I always felt closest to, Ron. You know that, don't you? Yes, Aunt Dot. We'll have some good times before I kick. We sure will, said Ron. When can you move in? How about the middle of next week? Good. That will give me enough time to get George to clean the furniture out of that room. Now you better go downstairs. Your mother will be home any minute, and I don't want her to think that you come up here just to see me. I've got to go, Aunt Dot. Tell her that I called her, that I was here earlier. Ronald, you're really something, she said, laughing. Then the laugh became a cough, and the coughing led her to begin to choke and spit some phlegm into the tissues that she had crumpled around her everywhere. When she regained her composure, she said, If you're going to go, then get out of here now, before she comes home and finds you here. Then you'll have to stay for supper. Tell her that I'm moving in with you. It'll make her happy. I already told her that I was going to ask you the next time I saw you. Ron, who had gotten up, shook his head and looked down at Aunt Dottie. There wasn't exactly fair, Aunt Dot. Suppose I said no. I knew you wouldn't, she said, smiling. Now get out of here, quick. When Ron got into his car, he went on automatic pilot and found himself driving to the apartment where he and Robin used to live. He stopped the car in front of it, looked at the screen windows. He put his head down and started to cry again. Then he punched himself in the leg. He was sick of being like this. He was still so raw that anything could set him back. Set back from the windows and surrounded by trees, we played at being married when we wished for who we wanted to be. We started a garden alongside our bed, but weak things grew, and the cat ate them. What Ron expected to find and what he saw when he arrived at Rahway were two very different things. The house was dark, and there were no cars in the driveway except for Chris's. Ron got to the back door and found it locked. He couldn't remember that ever having been the case before. Even when there wasn't any home, the back door was always open. He knocked at the door. He saw Chris's form flash from the kitchen and disappear into the room Ron was using. Then he saw Chris sneak a peek at the doorstep from the back of the drapes. And finally, Chris opened the door. Where is everybody? Said Ron. You wouldn't believe it, said Chris. He let out a disgusted sigh that shook his whole body. Where's Clue? On a plane by now. and the band, I called off the practice. The sheriff, the no-good motherfucker that he is, called the landlord this afternoon. He told him that drug taking and drug dealing was going on at the house, and that he needed the landlord's help to clean the place up. He did what? So then the landlord calls here and tells me what happened and says that he wants everybody, except for Warren, out of the house in 72 hours, or he's calling the police and having us raided. A fucking sheriff, said Ron. Have you found him yet? I haven't looked for him. What are you going to do? Chris scrunched his face into a fierce snarl, but then, almost comically, he wasn't able to say any words. Let's smoke a joint, said Ron. Are you crazy? How much pot have you got here? There's almost half a pound. I buried just about everything in the vacant lot after I got back from California. So, you got less than an ounce here. About that. Don't worry too much. What could they find here? Have you got records? Nothing that would mean anything to anybody. Do you have a book of phone numbers? In the briefcase. Let's get it. How about speed or cocaine? Clue left a little coke and there's some speed. Put them in plastic bags and hide them in one of Warren's sports jackets. Fuck him, Chris giggled. He liked the idea. Now let's roll up a couple of joints and stash the rest of the dope inside a pair of his socks. After they'd rolled up a half dozen joints, Chris took the pot and with Ron, they went to find a place in Warren's sock drawer. Now, said Ron, I think that we should definitely relax, smoke a joint, figure out what to do. I've already decided what to do, said Chris. It's over. Done. I want to take everything that belongs to me out of here this weekend. Where are we going to put it? Storage. I already rented a place over in Clark from somebody that I know. The only trick will be to dig up the dope. I owe the storage guy a quarter of a pound, and I'll store the rest at my parents' house. Let's not dig it up until the last minute, Chris. If anything is going to happen, I think that if it does go down, it'll be before we get to the moving truck. We need to get the quarter over there before we bring the stuff. Chris stopped and thought for a second. At least when we bring the stuff. Okay, that's what we'll do. Where are you going to live? I'll have to go home for a couple of weeks. Then I'm going to get a place in the city. Do you think that we should beat the shit out of Warren? Said Chris. I think that we should sell tickets and have the living room made into a ring and have you waiting to really fight him for the house when he gets here. Chris started to laugh but couldn't. A weird smile crossed his face. He wrote to me and asked if he could make this place together. What was he thinking about? He says that he's afraid I'll get caught and not be able to go to law school. Then he goes and turns me in. And now I'm evicted from my house within 3 days, or else I get raided. A no-good fucking sheriff. Chris didn't bother looking, and Warren was nowhere to be found for the rest of the night. They both spent the evening trying to act normal while they kept on checking the windows, pacing the rooms, and peering out into the street. At about 1 a.m, a squad car stopped a motorist for drunken and reckless driving about 3 houses down the street. Because the house was just set back from a main drag, this happened quite frequently. But when Chris saw the second car with flashing lights pull up, he became concerned. It took about 20 minutes to test and arrest a drunk. Chris stood there quietly watching as they took the man out of his vehicle, stood him up against the squad car. He saw that the man appeared disoriented. Then he watched while the cops loaded him into the back seat. He was leaving Rahway. That was for sure.